Some husbands entered that ambiguous lineage placement even at the beginning of the marriage. In a contract of 1529, Girolamo Querini promised his daughter Elena's bridegroom, Vincenzo Barozzi, a dowry of 3,000 ducats, plus another 3,000 ducats as Elena's non-dowry inheritance. In addition, this bride's father obligated himself to take, I'm quoting now, take the Magnifico Miser Vincenzo into his house and to consider him as his own son, to pay food and clothing expenses for him and his children, and to arrange for Vincenzo to administer all the family income and control the expenditures of the household. Most husbands didn't transfer their filial ties to their fathers-in-law, and most brides' fathers certainly didn't give their sons-in-law control of family finances. Lineage identity was too fundamental to a successful patrician adulthood to sever completely the inherited associations with the natal patriline and casata. But the arrangement between Vincenzo Barozzi and Girolamo Querini and other similar cases offer strong evidence that affectionate respect between husband and wife could reshuffle kinship affiliation by loosening the tight logic that made a married couple's residence in the home of the husband the spatial expression of the hierarchical relationship between husband and wife and the absorption of the wife into her husband's lineage. How otherwise, to cite an even more vivid instance, are we to parse the instructions that Lucrezia Priuli put into her will? She gave her husband Sebastiano, the deciding vote among her executors, a lifetime residence in the house she owned, as well as two beds and their furnishings, and the yearly income from 1,000 ducats of her state bond holdings. And she added, I'm quoting, when we married, Mr. Sebastiano came to live in my house with all of his movable goods. I therefore want him to have all those movables and not be subject to any molestation. This gender inversion of Lucrezia's solicitude for Sebastiano mirrored the provisions that most husbands made for their wives, as did Mataluta da Canals, when she made her husband her universal heir in the event of childlessness. As a reward, she said, for his excellent companionship, which she hoped would only grow better. Lucrezia's and Madaluzza's affection would not have taken the tangible form it did if they had not possessed property of their own. Their cases highlight the connection between the emotional bond that gradually grew between husbands and wives and the wives' economic contribution to the domestic casa.